A Treasury of Humorous Poetry, edited by Frederick Lawrence Knowles. Page 43. Larry O.D. by William W. Fink. Now, the Widow McGee and Larry O.D. had two little cottages out on the green, with just room enough for two pig pens between. The widow was young, and the widow was fair, with the brightest of eyes and the brownest of hair. And it frequently chanced, when she came in the morn, with the swill for her pig, Larry came with the corn. And some of the ears that he tossed from his hand in the pen of the widow were certain to land. One morning said he, "Ugh, Mistress McGee! It's a waste of good lumber, this running two rigs, with a fancy partition between our two pigs." "Indeed, sir, it is," answered Widow McGee, with the sweetest of smiles upon Larry O.D. "And then it looks kind of hard-hearted and mean, keeping two friendly pigs so exceedingly near, that whenever one grunts the other can hear, and yet keep a cruel partition between." "Sweet Widow McGee," answered Larry O.D., "if you fail in your heart, we are men to the pigs, and we men to ourselves to be running two rigs. Ugh, it made me heart ache when I taped the cracks of me shanty last March, at ye swinging your axe, and a bobbing your head and a stomping your feet, with your purty white hands just as red as a bait, a splitting your kindling wood out in the storm, when one little stove, it would keep us both warm." "Now, Piggy," says she, "Larry's courtin' to me, with his delicate, tender allusions to you. So now yes must tell me just what I must do. For if I'm to say yes, stir the swill with your mouth. But if I'm to say no, you must keep your nose out." "Now, Larry, for shame, to be bribin' a pig by a tossin' a handful of corn in its swig." "Me, darlint, the piggy says yes," answered he. And that was the courtship of Larry O.D. Tim Turpin by Thomas Hood. Tim Turpin, he was gravel blind, and ne'er had seen the skies, for nature, when his head was made, forgot to dot his eyes. So, like a Christmas pedagogue, poor Tim was forced to do, look out for pupils, for he had a vacancy for two. There's some have specs to help their sight of objects dim and small, but Tim had specs within his eyes and could not see at all. Now, Tim, he wooed a servant maid and took her to his arms, for he, like Pyramus, had cast a wall eye on her charms. By day she led him up and down, where'er he wished to jog, a happy wife, although she led the life of any dog. But just when Tim had lived a month in honey with his wife, a surgeon oped his Milton eyes like oysters with a knife. But when his eyes were opened thus, he wished them dark again, for when he looked upon his wife, he saw her very plain. Her face was bad, her figure worse. He couldn't bear to eat, for she was anything but like a grace before his meat. Now, Tim, he was a feeling man, for when his sight was thick, it made him feel for everything, but that was with a stick. So with a cudgel in his hand, it was not light or slim, he knocked at his wife's head until it opened up to him. And when the corpse was stiff and cold, he took his slaughtered spouse, and laid her in a heap with all the ashes of her house. But like a wicked murderer, he lived in constant fear from day to day, and so he cut his throat from ear to ear. The neighbors fetched a doctor in. Said he, "This wound I dread can hardly be sewed up. His life is hanging on a thread." But when another week was gone, he gave him stronger hope, instead of hanging on a thread, of hanging on a rope. Ah, when he hid his bloody work in ashes round about, How little he supposed the truth would soon be sifted out. But when the parish dustman came his rubbish to withdraw, he found more dust within the heap than he contracted for. A dozen men, to try the fact, were sworn that very day. But though they all were jurors, yet no conjurers were they. Said Tim unto those jurymen, "You need not waste your breath, for I confess myself at once the author of her death." And oh, when I reflect upon the blood that I have spilt, just like a button is my soul, inscribed with double guilt. Then turning round his head again, he saw before his eyes a great judge and a little judge, the judges of assize. The great judge took his judgment cap and put it on his head, and sentenced him by law to hang till he was three times dead. So he was tried, and he was hung, fit punishment for such, on Horsham Drop, and none can say it was a drop too much. The Elf Child by James Whitcomb Riley. Little orphan Annie's come to our house to stay, and wash the cups and saucers up, and brush the crumbs away, and shoo the chickens off the porch, and dust the hearth, and sweep, and make the fire, and bake the bread, and earn her board and keep. And all us other children, when the supper things is done, we set around the kitchen fire, and has the mostest fun a-listenin' to the witch tales that Annie tells about, and the goblins that get you if you don't watch out. Once there was a little boy who wouldn't say his prayers, and when he went to bed at night away upstairs, his mammy heard him holler, and his daddy heard him bawl, and when they turned the kivers down he wasn't there at all. And they seeked him in the rafter room, and cubby hole, and press, and seeked him up the chimbley flue, and everywheres, I guess. But all they ever found was this dish pants and roundabout. And the goblins'll get you if you don't watch out. And one time a little girl would always laugh and grin, and make fun of everyone and all her blood and kin. And once, when they was company, and old folks was there, she mocked 'em and shocked 'em and said she didn't care. And this does she kicked her heels and turned to run and hide. There was two great big black things a-standin' by her side, and they snatched her through the ceiling, for she knew'd what she's about. And the goblins'll get you if you don't watch out. And little orphan Danny says, when the blaze is blue, and the lampwick sputters, and the wind goes whoo, and you hear the crickets quit, and the moon is gray, and the lightning bugs in dew is all squinched away, you better mind your parents, and your teachers fond and dear, and cherish them as loves you, and dry the orphan's tear, and help the poor and needy ones it clusters all about, or the goblins'll get you if you don't watch out. The Perils of Invisibility by William S. Gilbert. Old Peter led a wretched life. Old Peter had a furious wife. Old Peter, too, was truly stout. He measured several yards about. The little fairy Picklekin one summer afternoon looked in and said, "Old Peter, how'd you do? Can I do anything for you? I have three gifts. The first will give unbounded riches while you live. The second, health where'er you be. The third, invisibility." "Oh, little fairy Picklekin," old Peter answered with a grin, "to hesitate would be absurd. Undoubtedly I choose the third." "'Tis yours," the fairy said. "Be quite invisible to mortal sight whene'er you please. Remember me, most kindly pray, to Mrs. P." Old Mrs. Peter overheard wee Picklekin's concluding word, and, jealous of her girlhood's choice, said, "That was some young woman's voice." Old Peter let her scold and swear. Old Peter, bless him, didn't care. "My dear, your rage is wasted quite. Observe, I disappear from sight." A well-bred fairy, so I've heard, is always faithful to her word. Old Peter vanished like a shot, but then his suit of clothes did not. For when conferred the fairy slim invisibility on him, she popped away on fairy wings without referring to his things. So there remained a coat of blue, a vest and double eyeglass too, his tail, his shoes, his socks as well, his pair of... No, I must not tell. Old Mrs. Peter soon began to see the failure of his plan, and then resolved, I quote the bard, to hoist him with his own petard. Old Peter woke next day and dressed, put on his coat and shoes and vest, his shirt and stock, but could not find his only pair of... Never mind. Old Peter was a decent man, and though he twigged his lady's plan, yet hearing her approaching, he resumed invisibility. "Dear Mrs. P., my only joy," exclaimed the horrified old boy. "Now give them up, I beg of you. You know what I'm referring to." But no, the cross old lady swore she'd keep his, what I said before, to make him publicly absurd. And Mrs. Peter kept her word. The poor old fellow had no rest. His coat, his stock, his shoes, his vest, were all that now met mortal eye. The rest invisibility. "Now, madam, give them up, I beg. I've had rheumatics in my leg. Besides, until you do, it's plain I cannot come to sight again. For though some mirth it might afford to see my clothes without their lord, yet there would rise indignant oaths if he were seen without his clothes." But no, resolved to have her quiz, the lady held her own, and his, and Peter left his humble cot to find a pair of you-know-what. But here's the worst of this affair. Whene'er he came across a pair already placed for him to don, he was too stout to get them on. So he resolved at once to train, and walked with all his main. For years he paced this mortal earth, to bring himself to decent girth. At night, when all around is still, you'll find him pounding up a hill, and shrieking peasants whom he meets fall down in terror on the peats. Old Peter walks through wind and rain, resolved to train and train and train, until he weighs 12 stone or so. And when he does, I'll let you know. End of pages 43 to 51.